helping people cope with and overcome life's challenges. This is Life Transformations with Michael Hart, Canadian certified counselor and award-winning psychotherapist.
Welcome to another episode of the Life Transformation Show, where every episode is a journey toward better mental health and relational harmony. Today's topic is Lessons in Couples Communication, Part 2. In last week's show, we used the biblical couple of Isaac and Rebecca to illustrate mistakes to avoid in couples communication. In this week's show, we will go deeper in this subject of couples communication. Are you struggling to discuss intimacy issues? Do you always end up in a big argument when you try to discuss financial problems or in-laws issues? Have you ended up in a big fight where you can't even remember what you started fighting about? Well, whatever the difficulties you are having with communication in your relationship, this show is for you. In today's show, we will be discussing 5 communication pitfalls that are the main reason your communication attempts fall off the rail. So let's go right into today's show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Denise. Thank you for doing such a good job of setting up such an important topic. You are right. Whatever issue we are facing in our relationships, communication is at the heart of it. In other words, if you're able to have good communication, you can make any situation better. However, if you have bad communication, even trivial issues can become issues that break your relationships apart.
So, Michael, let's get right into it. What is the first communication pitfall you want to discuss?
The first communication pitfall is the pitfall of deflection. So deflection is when one partner raises an issue that they are concerned about, but the other partner switches the subject to a totally different issue. And sometimes what ends up happening is you can have several issues that are now placed on the table and it becomes a free for all. Do you remember when you did this in 1970? Do you remember when this happened when we were dating? And the issue goes from the first issue that was raised to several different issues. And as you said in your introduction, that sometimes couples fight and they forget what they're fighting about. This is often caused by deflection because they are not zoned in on what the key issue is and stick to that issue until they have a resolution or a solution for it. Instead, deflection brings up many different issues. But I think it's best if we demonstrate it, Denise. So we're going to be using this couple by the name of Jane and John, and you're going to be Jane and I'm going to be John. So why don't you begin by raising an issue, Jane, and then we will demonstrate this for the listeners.
So I wanted to talk to you about the household chores. I've noticed that I've been doing the majority of the cleaning and cooking lately, and it's starting to feel overwhelming for me. I'd appreciate if we could find a more equitable division of labor.
Chores. You're really going to talk about chores? Your mother is the real issue. She comes over and interferes in our lives all the time. And I don't see you doing anything about it. But when it comes to me, you're so quick to criticize. Chores. Is that what you're really going to talk about? Okay, so there we have it. That's an issue of deflection. So what is happening there is that Jane raises this issue and John, the role that I am playing, goes into this deflection away from the chores to talking about the mother-in-law. And if we had more time, we could demonstrate how it goes into other subjects. But this is what happens with deflection. The real issue is not focused on, and a lot of other issues come up. So in 1 Corinthians 14:33, we read, "For God is not the author of confusion." What happens in deflection is that the conversation, the communication becomes very confusing, and the couple ends up being frustrated. And as we said before, the real issue is often forgotten because it is clouded out by the many different issues that are placed on the table.
So you're so right, Michael. Our God is not the author of confusion. So let's get right into the next communication pitfall. What would that be?
The next communication pitfalls, and these pitfalls are easy to remember because they all start with D. So we have the first one, which is deflect. The next one is disrupt. And this is a pattern that I see in many of the couples who come in for communication counseling. And we talk about these pitfalls in our couples seminar and conferences that we have. So disrupt, as the name suggests, is when one partner interrupts the other person's statement without giving them a chance to finish expressing their feelings. So you may have a situation above where, if we use the example that we had before, Jane starts talking, but before she could even get to the issue of the chores, or shortly after saying that, John interrupts and cut her off in mid-sentence. And so when this happens, the other person often feels as if they can get a word across. Maybe some of you are listening to my voice this morning and you're saying, I know exactly what that feels like. I'm trying to get my word out, but before I can finish my statement, I am interrupted by a statement, and maybe the person even misunderstood what I was going to say and assume what the issue is that I was going to be talking about. So when disruption happens, it short circuits the communication, and the issue cannot be adequately described and placed on the table because it is cut off before there's a chance to do so.
So, Michael, as you speak, you know, I was thinking, when someone disrupts, is it always a deliberate act not to hear what the other person is saying? Or are there other factors?
Yes, I think there are other factors that can be involved in that. Sometimes I don't think the intention is to disrupt the argument or to disrupt what the other person is saying. But there are some persons who they are anxious by nature, and they may feel, here we go again, there's going to be a discussion. Some people are conflict averse as well. And so if there's an issue that is being raised, they might begin to be anxious about the conversation that is going to ensue. And as a result of that, they interrupt. So it might not be deliberate. It might be driven by anxiety. It might be driven by shame, because some people are shame prone, and they feel shame when someone tried to point out something that they are not happy with. So how they're hearing it, they're not hearing that Jane is not happy with the chores. If John is shame prone, how he's hearing the conversation is that I am a failure. I am a husband that's no good. And sometimes partners will even come out and say that. So I guess I am no good. I guess I am a failure as a husband, or I guess I'm a failure as a wife. And these statements come from the fact that the person is prone to shame. So they are not hearing the issue. They're feeling shame. And another common reason why we have disruption in our communication attempts is that sometimes the person who is raising the issue talks for too long. In the example that we gave, Jane spoke for less than a minute and she adequately raised the issue of the cooking and the cleaning and how she feels overwhelmed. But what happened, what plays out in most marriages is that Jane will start talking and she will go on for 15 minutes telling John how much he's upset. And when that happens, there is a problem with your communication. If you talk about an issue for more than 2 minutes, by the time you're finished, the other person has lost interest in what you're saying because nobody likes to be lectured. So a pattern of communication that works best is to speak in short bursts. If you have something to say, say it concisely and allow the other person to respond. And the other person too should respond in a concise and short way. And so you can have back and forth 2 minute talks by each person. And this conversation could go on for 15 minutes or 16 minutes with each person talking 2 minutes at a time. And I think that's much better than a monologue or a lecture. So, some people interrupt because the other person that is raising the issue is talking too long and they need to get their word in. And so they interrupts and disrupts the conversation. And I know there's a scripture too that says in Proverbs 18 verse 13, that sprouting off before listening to the facts is both shameful and foolish. So this is from the New Living Translation. So if you are disrupting someone and answering the issue before you have listened carefully, Proverbs speaks against that. So as Christian especially, or even non-Christian couples, if we really do love the person that we are with and we want our relationship to be happy, it is crucial that we don't disrupt, that we allow the other person to speak and finish what they have to say without interrupting them.
So, Michael, great points. I'm hearing you say that, you know, for good communication, we should listen and we should also speak concisely and allow the other person to respond. Great points. So let's get right to the third communication pitfall. What would that be?
The third communication pitfall is denial. And denial is where a person denies outright that there is a problem or that an event has occurred. It could be an example of that could be where someone is caught red-handed, as the saying goes, doing something that they shouldn't do. It could be an inappropriate conversation with someone online and you're showing them the facts that this is what I see in your Facebook. This is inappropriate. You shouldn't be having these conversations. It should not be happening. And the person just denies, I didn't do that. And this can be very frustrating for the other spouse because you are showing the person, the evidence. And instead of saying, you know what, I did this, I am sorry, and apologize for it, they're denying that it actually happens. But there are other examples of denial as well, that it's a little different. And we're going to demonstrate one of those other forms of denial. So Dennis, why don't you be Jane again, and I'll be John as we discuss this other form of denial.
Well, Michael, I need to talk to you about something that happened at the Easter family gathering. When we were all sitting around the table, you made a joke about me. You ridiculed me and insulted me in front of everyone.
What are you talking about? I didn't make any jokes about you. You must be talking about something else or someone else. Or maybe you're taking what I said out of context, as you usually do. But I did not make any joke about you. So just let's get that right. Okay, so there you have an example of denial. So here we have Jane raising the fact that she's feeling belittled and she's feeling as if she was a subject of a joke. And we have John saying, this didn't happen. I didn't make a joke about you. And John could be saying, yes, I did say something, but it wasn't a joke about you, instead of saying outright. He could be implying that, yes, I did say something, but it was not a joke about you. And so we have in this case a different kind of denial.
So, Michael, is the person who denies consciously lying?
That's a very good question, Denise. Not in all cases. Sometimes what we have playing out here are two different perspectives of the same event. So in this example of Jane and John, John could have a perspective that what he said was not a joke at Jane's expense. But Jane is hearing it as something that is demeaning to her and belittling to her. And unless she gets a chance to explain those emotions and reasons why she feel that way to John, they could have these two different perspectives where denial plays out.
So let's help the listeners who may be experiencing this in their relationships. Are there things a person can do to minimize the chances of denial?
Another great question. One of the first thing I think we can do to minimize denial is to be specific. Notice that in Jane's way of raising the issue, she wasn't specific. She talked about a joke that was made around the table during the Easter dinner, but she wasn't specific about what was said. So when you are more specific in bringing up what happens, the chances of denial becomes minimized. And also, if you talk about how you feel instead of what the person did, it also makes it less likely that the person is going to be able to deny that you're feeling this way. So here is what Jane could have said instead. And Dennis, why don't you go ahead and just say that new version of how Jane is going to raise this issue?
I need to talk to you about something that happened at the Easter family gathering. When we were all sitting around the table and you said the turkey that I made was a good burnt offering, I felt belittled and that the meal I had made was not good enough for you and your family.
So notice the big difference there. She's specific and she's talking about how she felt. She felt belittled and as if the meal was not good enough. And so the probability of John denying that becomes minimized, because now she's saying what he said and now she's saying how she feels. So it's hard to deny a person's feeling, because how you feel is how you feel. And if you're the person who tends to deny even when everything is said the right way and you still go to this place of denial, then you should bear in mind what the book of Proverbs says. Proverbs 28:13 tells us, whoever conceals their sins does not prosper, but the one who confesses and renounces them finds mercy.
Michael will be right back. You have been listening to the Life Transformation Show, where award-winning psychotherapist Michael Hart of Elim Counseling Services has been speaking on the topic, Lessons in Couples Communication, Part 2. You can find out more about us at elimcounselingministry.com or by calling 613-699-1677, where you can also make a donation to this Christ-centered ministry. Your donations help us to stay on the air and to provide subsidized counseling to those who can't afford it. Back to Michael.
So a relationship cannot prosper if you're with a partner, or if you're the partner who has the tendency to deny, because you can never be wrong. You have to be right even when the fact is staring you in your face. If that's the case, you need to turn from that so that your relationship can prosper.
Another scripture that came to mind for me is 1 Corinthians 13. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in truth.
That's a very good scripture as well.
So let's get right on, Michael. Those were excellent explanations and insightful stuff that you just said. So what would be the fourth communication pitfall?
The fourth communication pitfall is diminish. And diminish happens when the other person admits to some wrongdoing, but diminishes the hurt that the other person is experiencing. So it is unlike denial. Denial, the person denies it. In diminishing, the person is not saying that the event that has been raised didn't happen. But the way that they're going about it is to make it seem as if it's not a big deal. Here is what it would look like. Go ahead and be Jane, Denise, and then I'll be John. Go ahead.
I wanted to talk to you about something that's been on my mind lately. I've noticed that you've been going out with your friends 3 nights per week. And it's been making me feel like we're not spending enough quality time together. I miss having that connection with you.
I don't see what the big deal is. I'm still home 4 nights a week. And I don't go out to every invitation that I get with my friends. You know how many invitations I turn down, Jane, just for you? I am home 4 nights a week. Why are you making such a big deal about it? It's not like I am completely neglecting you. So here we have an example of what diminishing sounds like. And you should see if this is happening in your relationship in a different form.
So what would you suggest for couples who find themselves in this trap?
If you find yourself in a relationship where there is diminishing taking place, the person who is being diminished should speak about their feelings. Use feeling words to express how you feel. So instead of just saying that the other person is out 3 nights a week, spend more time thinking about how you're going to approach the conversation to talk about how you feel. Maybe you feel lonely. Maybe you feel as if you're not a priority. Maybe you feel neglected. And those are all great words that you could use to express how you feel to get your point across. And that would minimize the chance of diminishing taking place. And I think the next thing to keep in mind is to listen more like a lover and less like a lawyer. John was listening like a lawyer, and he's picking apart the argument, saying, there are 7 days in the week, I am only gone for 3. Instead of hearing Jane's heart, Jane is feeling lonely. Jane is feeling as if she's not a priority and she needs more quality time with him. And so if he listens more like a lover, he will be more able to meet her need and attend to her concern.
And in this example with John, it seems John was acting quite selfishly. So, is selfishness one of the psychological factors that lead to diminishing?
Absolutely. I think John is not in tune with how Jane is feeling, because if he were in tune with her feelings, he would not go to the position of using logic to overcome her argument. Yes, he's right. Statistically, he's right. He's home more than he's out, but he's still gone often lot of the time. And any woman in that situation would be concerned. So I think there's a level of selfishness there.
Great points, Michael. Again, 1 Corinthians 13:5, love is not self-seeking, correct?
Absolutely. It's a good verse about the necessity to avoid selfishness.
So, Michael, we're on the fifth and final communication pitfall. Let us hear what that is.
The fifth and final communication pitfall is demonizing. And this is when someone raises an issue, but instead of discussing the issue, the other person goes into attack mode and accuses the other person of being the problem. Here is what this sounds like in the role playing of Jane and John.
This is very concerning to me that we are struggling to pay our rent on time because of your reckless spending. You know, you didn't need to buy a new guitar. You have four already and we're not rich. This is starting to cause a lot of stress on me, uncertainty for all of us. And I'm concerned about our financial stability.
Here we go again with your constant worrying about money. Don't you trust God? God will provide for us. Maybe if you had more faith and spent more time reading your Bible, you wouldn't be so anxious all the time. You're just letting the devil use you to sow discord in our marriage. So here we have an example of what demonizing sounds like. And it's kind of ironic that this person is using Bible to demonize the other person, right? And so this often plays out in Christian marriage.
So what should someone do if they're being demonized?
The first is do not reciprocate the attack. But what often ends up happening is that the other person's feeling is hurt because they're attacked and they go on the attack as well. And they use words that are not necessarily fine in the Bible, you know, to put it nicely. And so you have this kind of free for all that make matters worse. And the second point is do not let the demonizing shut down the discussion permanently. It may be good to take a moment away, but you should go back to the conversation after. Proverbs 15:18 tells us that a hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. So if Jane goes to the calm mood and just quietly say, I see you're not in a good mood, but we'll talk about this at some other time, there will be peace. But if she goes on the attack, then this is going to start a big blaze. Colossians 4:6 tells us, let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt. And that phrase, seasoned with salt, actually means our conversation is to be life-giving.
Thank you so much, Michael, for this insightful discussion on Lessons in Couples Communication Part 2. And thank you, listeners, for joining us on this episode of the Life Transformation Show. Don't miss next week's episode where we'll be covering the topic, Living with a Neurodivergent Spouse, using the story of Abigail and Nabal. Neurodivergence in marriage refers to situations where one or both partners have brains that function in ways that are outside of what is considered typical or neurotypical. This can include conditions such as autism spectrum disorder or attention deficit hyperactive disorder and others. If you missed any part of today's show or want to revisit it, you can find the episode posted on Elim Counseling Services YouTube channel. Just search for Life Transformation and subscribe to stay updated on all our latest content. You can find out more about us at elimcounselingministry.com.
So until next time, this is your host, Michael Hart of Elim Counseling Services.
And your co-host, Denise Hart.
Praying together that God would bless you in all your relationships and keep you sound in mind and pure in heart.